Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, MD, one of the doctors of the future.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me today on Phase 3 Wellness. We had a couple of technical difficulties today getting everything set up, so I'm having to broadcast today from my cell phone. I'll probably log into my platform here, but thankful the technology, we have a backup where we can actually, I can actually broadcast from my cell phone in times of technical difficulties. So we're going to improvise, adapt, overcome. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'm broadcasting from, I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I'm broadcasting from right outside of Orlando, where I have a practice and ministry. And I want to thank you for joining me today. I'm right here on Sunday afternoon, typically from 3:30 to 4:30. Today we have an excellent show for you, and we are going to be following the same outline that I always follow. We will start off with the Week in Natural News Review segment, then we'll move on to the Healing Foods segment, and then we will close out with the Healing Herbs segment. Now, and we'll go ahead and jump right into our Week in Natural News Review segment, where we take an article anywhere between two and normally we take anywhere between one and three articles, and I talk about them, analyze them, put my little two cents in with respect to an article that was published during the week. And then we'll move over into our Healing Food segment after that, where we'll be talking about today. We'll be talking about some of the healing benefits of the food cucumber. And then we'll finish off where we left off last week with the benefits of the herb peppermint and how some of the ways it can be used and a little bit of some of the benefits that's associated with it. Again, I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. You're listening to the Phase 3 Wellness Podcast and the Blog Talk Radio Show. We're going to go ahead and get started with our first article in our Week in National News Review segment. And we're going to start off with weed killers showing up in dozens of breakfast foods. That's our main article. We're going to start off with that today. And this article was taken from CNN.com. And in this particular article, it was entitled, "Dozens More Breakfast Foods Test Positive for Trace Amounts of Weed Killer," report says. And it's interesting. The article starts off by talking about the I guess you call it the poison. It's a poison, for lack of a better term. And it's found in Roundup. I'll go ahead and we'll start off with what the article says. It says, "Dozens of common breakfast cereals and snack bars have trace amounts of a controversial herbicide found in the weed killer Roundup," according to a report released today by an environmental advocacy group. The Environmental Working Group, EWG, found that 26 of the 28 products that had levels of Roundup's main ingredient, glyphosate, that were higher than what EWG scientists consider protective of children's health. An early report found similar results in over 30 oat-based foods. The article says, further, manufacturers say their products are safe, but the EWG report argues that the vast majority of foods tested, such as Honey Nut Cheerios and Quaker Simply Granola Oats, have glyphosate levels that might pose a cancer risk with long-term consumption. Now, those in the natural health community have known for a while of the use of this herbicide and the dangers of it. And only this other one as well, but this one in particular has been mentioned quite a bit. And to go on further with what the article said, this actually made mainstream news. As you can see, it pointed up, it popped up on CNN. It goes on to say that none of the foods violated, according to the manufacturers, none of the foods violated EPA limits on the herbicide, according to the article rather. But the EWG uses a far more conservative health benchmark. which would be the most restrictive in the country. And it said that California's proposed glyphosate limit, which would be the most restrictive in the country, still allows for glyphosate levels that are over 100 times higher than the EGW's threshold. The EGW, the environmental group, says its lower threshold includes an added buffer for children, as, quote, exposure during early life can have more stringent effects on development, more significant effects on development later in life, according to Dr. Alexis Timken, the lead scientist on the EWG report. So again, these are actual scientists. They're just not some people who got together and decided that, hey, you know, these things we don't like these things, so we're gonna make up a report or a story. Now, on the flip side, the manufacturers, according to this article, dispute that threshold. Quaker says in a statement that the EWG report artificially creates a safe level. Let me back up. Quaker said in a statement that the EWG report artificially creates a safe level for glyphosate that is detached from those that have been established by responsible regulatory bodies in an effort to grab headlines. So here, now, one of the manufacturers that was cited in their products having levels of glyphosate in their products, of course they're going to respond. They're saying that this report produced by EWG is basically that it artificially creates safe levels for glyphosate that's not based on historical or regulatory bodies, the historical establishment of regulatory bodies for this particular herbicide. General Mills, whose products were also cited in the report, maintained that glyphosate levels in its food do not pose any health risk. So, again, they're not saying that the levels are not there. They're saying, they're arguing that they do not pose any health risk. They go on to say, quote, the extremely low levels of pesticide residue cited in recent news reports is a tiny fraction of the amount the government allows, the company said in a statement to CNN. It goes on to say that consumers are regularly bombarded with alarming headlines, but rarely have time to weigh the information for themselves. They say further, we feel this is important. We feel this is a consumer should be aware of when considering this topic. Now, so again, you have what the manufacturers of the food are saying, and you have this particular group, environmental protection group, advocate. Now, the article goes on to say that in August, a jury in San Francisco ordered Roundup's manufacturer, Monsanto, to pay $289 million in damages to a school groundskeeper who argued that the glyphosate-based weed killer caused his cancer. And then a judge, the article says, on Monday upheld that decision, but they slashed Monsanto's payout from $289 million to $78 million. The pharmaceutical giant Bayer actually recently purchased Monsanto and said in a statement that the company plans to appeal the court's decision. They said, quote, glyphosate-based herbicides have been used safely and successfully for over four decades worldwide, they said in a statement to CNN. So, again, a jury, after hearing the evidence, decided that, and they were probably trying to punish Monsanto, they said that that the school ground worker apparently working with this herbicide with Roundup, and they were able to tie it to the cause of his cancer. And I think his cancer, if I remember correctly, is actually terminal cancer. He's going to die. But a judge cut that $289 million judgment down to $78 million, which is something, you know, just as an aside, you know, I understand that the judges in many jurisdictions have certain power. But I think it does not do our system well for a jury to fine for a significant amount and then for a judge to basically be able to, I guess, find it excessive. Nevertheless, the article goes on to say further that, quote, EPA, they go on to say, quote, there's an extensive body of research on glyphosate and glyphosate-based herbicides, including more than 800 rigorous registration studies required by EPA, European, and other regulators that confirm that these products are safe when used as directed. That's basically Bayer and Monsanto, where Monsanto has been purchased by Bayer. So, again, they're making a case that why these products are safe based upon history. Now, The EPA concluded in 2017 that glyphosate, it, quote, is not likely to be carcinogenic to humans, but a World Health Organization agency, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, determined in 2015 that glyphosate is probably carcinogenic to humans. Dr. Chen, if I pronounce his name correctly, Chen Sheng Lu, an associate professor of environmental exposure biology at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health, defended the WHO and WHO group, calling it a world-renowned and reputable academic and research institute in cancer epidemiology. The EPA, in contrast, he says, is a regulatory agency and in many ways a political agency. In 2018, I would not hold EPA's view on glyphosate as a fact. And I would tend to agree with that, and, you know, especially when you look at some of the things that how the FDA is basically a therefore they're supposed to be protecting the public, but they're really not. They protect the big companies. They basically themselves own so many. They own vaccine patents, for instance, themselves. How are they going to regulate companies that they hire the very people? They have like a revolving door. When people leave these great companies, these big companies, pharmaceutical companies, many times they go over and they work for the FDA, and they still have their connections and ties. So again, it's the same thing with the EPA. Well, money and power. It's been shown over and over and over again that as Dr. Chen Sheng Lu says, you know, he says, you know, the EPA is a regulatory agency and in many ways a political agency. And again, we've seen so many times in the United States, at least, that when these regulatory agencies are supposed to be looking out for the taxpayers and looking out for the citizenry, they're actually not doing that. They're actually looking out for the companies that they're actually supposed to be protecting the citizenry from. So again, based upon the evidence that we've seen here in the U.S. over decades, and some of the corruption that goes on, I would tend to side with the group that points out, as well as with the jury, it also found that Roundup is a cancer-causing agent. The article goes on to say that the IARC pointed out that found that glyphosate is carcinogenic. They have vigorously defending its findings, but a separate WHO panel assessing pesticide residues determined in 2016 that glyphosate is unlikely to pose a carcinogenic risk to humans from exposure through diet. So the article goes on to say, adding to a dizzying array of contradictory findings. Puzzling conclusions like those are not uncommon in cancer research, according to Dr. Otis W. Brawley, the American Cancer Society's chief medical scientific officer, the article says. The article goes on to say further, the IARC, I think, is very, very reasonable in their assessments, he said, but the IARC will sometimes make an assessment that is not satisfying to many of us. Brawley noted, again, he's the American Cancer Society chief medical scientific officer, and again, the American Cancer Society, they themselves, as I've talked about on here before, are not totally really trying to cure cancer. They're not. And so that's something else that we consider. His broadly noted that the other commonly consumed substances are also classified as potentially carcinogenic by the IARC. Based on limited evidence, for example, the IARC said that drinking very hot beverages probably causes cancer of the esophagus in humans. Yet hundreds of millions of people drink coffee every day. Well, that's true, but coffee is actually a carcinogenic substance. And who knows, seeing as how it's already carcinogenic as it is, by adding that heat overall, who knows if whether or not that, it seems reasonable to me that could contribute to. In fact, if you're working with people who have cancer, one of the things that they must stop doing is they must stop drinking coffee if they hope to be healed. So again, you know, you have a lot of people with a lot of different positions and whatnot, and you have a lot of companies and that stand to make a lot of money as a result of these things being sold on the free market. And Brawley says further that parents should instead make sure their kids are eating fruits, vegetables, and getting the nutrition they need. More children are definitely going to be harmed by inappropriate diets, he said, than by a small amount of glyphosate in their oatmeal. The article says further that glyphosate can make its way into processed food after being used on farms that grow oats. Most crops grown in fields use some form of pesticides, and trace amounts are found in the majority of food we all eat, said General Mills in a statement. The article says further, we continue, citing General Mills, we continue to work closely with farmers, our suppliers, and conservation organizations to minimize the use of pesticides on the ingredients we use in our foods. The article says further, though, some experts are urging parents to be vigilant. I think it's very important for people to realize how widespread exposure to glyphosate is, said Dr. Sarah Evans, an assistant professor at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Quoting her further, the article says there are things in the food that they purchase that aren't listed on the label and that they probably don't want to be given their children, she said. She works at Mount Sinai's Children Environmental Health Center. The article says further, I don't think that people should become hysterical, she said, but people need to be really aware of where their food is coming from and what's getting into their foods. And when dealing with children, Harvard's Lou believed that parents should err on the side of caution. Quoting him, again, he's the doctor that I quoted earlier from Harvard. What is more scary, he asked, choosing cereal between organic and conventional, or being told by your doctor that you or your children have cancer? The EWG's early report found glyphosate in 5 of the 16 organic breakfast samples they tested. So even in the organic samples that they tested, out of the 16 that they tested, they found of the organic foods, they found some of these glyphosate in those, but none of those levels exceeded the group's health benchmark. Temkin, it says Temkin, who was also lead author on that report, said that parents don't need to throw out their half-eaten box of cereal just yet. We are talking about lifetime cumulative exposure, she said. But if you do want to reduce your risk, we do know that organic oats and organic cereals, they say, are a better option. So basically, the article starts off, but one of the things that you often see, even when it's in the mainstream media, or mainly when it's in the mainstream media, you see that instead of us being able to see a definitive position, that definitive position is always marred by financial interests of major, major companies. There's nothing wrong with companies being major. There's nothing wrong with companies making money. There's nothing wrong with any of that. The problem is that when any company or individual is allowed to make money at the expense and detriment of other people, and when that occurs, it's always going to be it's not a good thing. And so, again, just understand what comes out of this article is basically a lot of the food that we're eating has glyphosate in it. I would come down on the side, like they said, on the cumulative effect. Think about it. If most of what you're eating has some trace amounts of glyphosate in it, and you take that into consideration, is not just your cereal, but a lot of other different foods that you're eating. And then if we can assume all of the other pesticides and unhealthy things that are being put in the food, not only that, and you add to the fact that the nutrients are being stripped out of the food because of the way that they grow them overall. But then when you take the nutritional deficiency element with the cumulative effect of eating these foods, is there any wonder why cancer is the second leading cause of death? But yet they tell us, oh, don't worry about it. Just, eat these trace amounts. Yeah, maybe if the trace amount was only in one food every now and again, but when you have trace amounts in almost everything that you're eating or in a large amount of what you're eating, and you're eating 3 times a day, some people eat 3 times a day, plus in between meals, plus snacks. The trace amounts can very quickly, when everything else is considered, end up creating an internal environment where you're very apt to develop. And so I agree, again, just understand that, as pointed out, and this is best if you can, even though it's a lot more expensive at times, to try and eat organic and eat as healthy as you can, because who knows how much more is in the food than what we're being told. Probably a lot more. You listen to Faith Through Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Again, today, as I said earlier at the show began, because of technical difficulties, I'm having to use my studio software here. I'm having to use my cell phone. the broadcast. So if it sounds a little different, that's why. Again, let's move on to our second article. We're still in our first segment, the Week in Natural News Review segment. And in this article, we're going to take this from Natural Health 365, and it's entitled, The Top 10 Reasons to Skip the Flu Shot. Top 10 Reasons to Skip the Flu Shot. Again, most of what you know about the flu shot is probably, if you're a big believer in it, it's probably incorrect. And I don't, most people are not really told how dangerous and how really ineffective the flu shot is. Start off by looking at this article from naturalhealth365.com. It says, as surely as the calendar signals the change of seasons, the annual onslaught of warnings to get the flu shot comes around each and every fall. From physicians to pharmacists to the media, the admonishment of anyone hesitant about getting the flu shot continues till the first signs of spring. The article says further, the implication of is that those who refuse the flu shot are not only putting their own health at risk, but also contributing to a potential epidemic. Now, as I said on here before, let's stop and think about that for a minute. How could those who refuse to get the flu shot be contributing to a potential epidemic if those who got the flu shot, if the flu shot actually worked? Because if the flu shot actually worked the way that it's being presented that it works, then those, if I had the flu shot myself, I would not be affected by those who refuse to get it because I'm protected. So think about it. If the majority of people got the flu shot and the majority of people in the minority didn't get the flu shot, how is the minority causing an epidemic to spread among those who are so-called protected? So again, that does not make sense to me. But nevertheless, if we go into the article, it says many in the medical community and other proponents of the flu vaccine would have you believe it is absolutely necessary for sustaining health. However, a closer look at the long list of vaccine dangers associated with the shot reveals it is more about dollars spent on pharmaceuticals than it is about public health. And then it goes into some of these reasons. Let's look at some of these reasons that's pointed out in this article. Again, it's from Natural Health. It's from naturalhealth365.com. It says, number one, ineffectiveness of the flu shot is well documented. Each year, flu vaccination is created months ahead of time based on a best guess of what strains are going to give the most trouble when flu season arrives. So it's not based on science from the onset. It's based on the best guess. The article says, even public health officials have voiced doubt about effectiveness. If you come into contact with a different strain of the flu, you have put yourself at risk of side effects, yet become ill anyway. So they're guessing, you know, what strain of the flu is going to come out, so they create the vaccine based on that. But if it's a different strain, then you have gotten a useless flu shot. Secondly, it says the same officials pushing the flu vaccine, specifically members of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, stand to make billions of dollars from successful sale of the pharmaceuticals. The ability these officials have to work objectively in the best interest of public health is highly compromised, to say the very least. Kind of like as I said earlier, if you're recommending something that has been shown to be not as effective as it's being made to be, and you're pushing it and you stand to make billions of dollars off of it, you can't be said to be trusted without being looked upon, or without your position being looked upon with great scrutiny. Finally, number three, it says, it is no coincidence that when a child is vaccinated, he or she develops a number of symptoms, including runny nose, ear infection, and bronchitis, even pneumonia. The article says, further, the flu vaccine introduces the flu virus to the body, sensitizing the body to the virus, lowering immunity, and creating symptoms. Number four, it has no benefits for children, infants and children. And they point out the scientific review of over 50 studies involving 260,000 children from ages 6 to 22 months did not uncover any evidence that young children benefit from the flu vaccine. The article said that, in fact, results showed the flu shot was no more effective than a placebo. Yet at the same time, research has shown that the injection itself can lead to serious health complications in patients of any age. Problems have included infection, adverse immunological response, and even death. Number five, they point out, is increased threat to those at risk. flu vaccines, the article says, introduce live viruses to the human body. For patients already suffering from a suppressed immune system and reduced ability to fight off viruses, the shot can increase the risk of the full effects of the flu, as well as increase susceptibility to pneumonia as well as other contagious diseases. Number six, they point out, the article points out, hazard of mercury toxicity. The flu vaccine contains mercury, a heavy metal known to cause memory loss, respiratory problems, cardiovascular disease, deficiency disorder, digestive imbalances, oral health issues, and other health concerns. The amount of mercury contained in a multi-dose flu shot far exceeds the maximum allowable daily exposure limit. Number seven of the 10, that the article points out, is evidence of neurological disorders. There's evidence that that ingredients used in flu vaccines can cause serious neurological disorders. Many receiving flu shots in the 1976 swine flu outbreak suffered permanent nerve damage. This is not surprising, considering flu vaccines can contain a number of hazardous materials, including formaldehyde, detergent, and mercury, in addition to strains of the live virus. The article says, further, the number eight reason is greater risk of Alzheimer's disease. It says the elderly are frequent targets in the push for the flu shot, yet there is evidence that those receiving the flu vaccine for 3 to 5 consecutive years run a tenfold increase for developing Alzheimer's disease. Wow. Than those who do not have any flu shot. In addition, aging tends to bring with it a weakened immune system under normal living habits, increasing the risk of dangerous symptoms when the flu virus is introduced to the body. So think about it. That is a significant finding that if you are an elderly person and you receive the flu vaccine for 3 to 5 consecutive years, it increases the likelihood that you would develop Alzheimer's by tenfold. The number nine reason the article points out is multiple strains bring multiple risks. In recent years, particularly since the arrival of the H1N1 strain, it has become increasingly difficult to pinpoint which strains to vaccinate against. Moreover, receiving shots of multiple strains increases the health risk as greater numbers of viruses and harmful vaccines are introduced into your body. And finally, number 10 says vitamin C is a better option, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Studies have shown that overuse of the flu vaccine, along with drugs like Tamiflu and Relenza, can cause flu viruses to mutate, potentially resulting into more deadly viruses, and they become resistant overall. And so rather than reducing susceptibility to the flu, so this natural antioxidant, talking about vitamin C, has multiple advantages to your health, all without the risk of toxins and their side effects. So again, those are 10 reasons. It's top 10 reasons to skip the flu shot. That's from naturalhealth365.com. Excellent article. And we should take note and listen to these reasons. And basically, you know, if we to protect ourselves, we do those basic things like washing our hands, et cetera, but also boosting our immune system. I really like the idea of taking vitamin C, lipo C, particularly during the flu and cold seasons, taking between 3 and 5,000 milligrams a day. Especially the lipo C, I think would probably work in such a way to help prevent or protect you rather from developing or picking up a cold or flu virus. And I would say at least 3,000 milligrams a day, and probably at the height of flu season, because you're coming into contact with so many people who, even though they might have taken the flu vaccine themselves, may still get sick. But again, you don't have to worry about the flu vaccine becoming resistant to vitamin C. Not going to happen. Or resistant to some of these other herbal protection we have, because essentially things help boost the immune system. And with the immune system has its backing and strength, and it's going to basically help protect itself. So again, you listen to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. That would be the last article that we're talking about today in the Week in Natural News segment. We will pivot over to now our second segment, which is our Healing Food segment. And on our Healing Food segment today, we're going to talk briefly about cucumber, which many people like cucumber in their salads. but they never think about just how healthy a food cucumber is. Cucumber is actually the fourth most cultivated vegetable in the world. But most people, we like to eat it in our salads. Sometimes we eat it on our sandwiches or whatnot. But then a lot of times you see people using it. You see women using it for skin health. So let's look at some of the things about that are beneficial about cucumbers and why we put it into our healing food segment this week. First, they can help hydrate and regulate temperature. Like watermelons, cucumbers are about 95% water. So eating cucumbers can help keep your body hydrated. And with this excess water, it also helps to flush out toxins. And as I said before, the skin on cucumbers also contain 10% of the recommended daily allowance of vitamin C. And as we were just talking about vitamin C a minute ago, this is the recommended daily allowance. But that's, of course, don't confuse that with therapeutic amounts, as I talk about taking 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams per day. But not to say, just go to show how the Creator has put in our food the things that help us keep us healthy. Also, when using cucumbers as hair and skin medicine, as I pointed out, cucumber skin also can relieve sunburn as well as mild skin irritation, similar to aloe vera. Now, it's not quite as powerful as aloe vera for that same purpose, but it can actually help relieve sunburn as well as mild skin irritation. There's actually been some research that has shown that cucumber actually can help stimulate hair growth as well. And also, putting cucumber slices around the eyes also helps reduce puffiness, where you see women tend to use them for in their pursuit to continue to look younger or to look beautiful. Cucumbers also have some studies that show that cucumbers can have an effect on lowering your blood pressure. But there's studies that have shown that eating cucumbers can actually lower your blood pressure by up to 5.5 points in people who have high blood pressure, who have high blood pressure or who are hypertensive. Of course, when coupled with a diet of low starch and low proteins, because cucumbers are actually high in potassium and magnesium, they help both of these minerals can help actually regulate your blood pressure. One of the things that's often recommended by naturopaths or herbalists or natural practitioners is carrot juice combined with cucumber juice, and some that basically helps with the blood pressure, systolic and diastolic. And so there are studies that show, as I just pointed out, cucumber can help those with hypertensive to bring down their higher blood pressure. Cucumbers also helps to fight cancer because of some of the anti-cancer chemicals, phytochemicals that they contain. It can actually reduce the risk of several cancers, including breast cancer, uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, as well as prostate cancer. They can also help fight diabetes. You heard me say before that if you have diabetes, one of the best things to do for diabetes is to go on an all-salad diet for about 2 weeks, eating salad every day, a couple of times a day, and it should include cucumbers amongst other colorful vegetables. So cucumbers juice actually can contain a hormone needed by the cell of the pancreas to produce insulin. And so that's why, again, cucumbers can be very beneficial to those who have diabetes. I talked last week about the benefit of vitamin D3 for diabetes. So here you have another benefit of another food, cucumbers, and how, again, cucumbers contain insulin, which is beneficial to your pancreas. Cucumbers also help to aid in your digestion. They have natural high levels of water as well as dietary fiber. And so, again, as I said earlier, this helps to flush out toxins out of the body, and this helps aids in your digestion. I mean, so many people have disorders of the digestive tract, or they say things such as heartburn, gastritis, and even ulcers. And these issues can be significantly reduced by a daily consumption of drinking cucumber juice. Cucumbers can also be used and have been used as remedies for chronic constipation. Cucumbers, like most of your raw foods, especially of fruits and vegetables, are also going to be beneficial in inhibiting inflammation. Fresh cucumbers have been shown to inhibit inflammatory substances such as COX-2 and nitric oxide while improving antioxidant levels in your body. So that's because the vegetable cucumbers, like most vegetables, contain alkalizing elements. They contain electrolytes and fluids that help make make it excellent in improving your energy levels. And when the body has more energy, it has more energy to contribute to the healing, to detoxification, to just the overall effort of it healing itself when you have more energy. Finally, cucumbers can help to promote joint health. Well, they actually have very high levels of silica, which help promote your joint health by strengthening your body's connective tissue. So again, as I said earlier, cucumber juice, when you mix it with carrot juice, can help relieve. Not only can it help with your blood pressure, but it can also relieve gout as well as arthritis by lowering your acid levels. Those are just some of the benefits that you can get from consuming cucumbers and using them in salads, eating them raw. I love to eat cucumbers with cut up a cucumber, a cucumber and a half, and cut it up, slice it, sprinkle a little salt on it, a little lemon juice, I think that's it's good. Even maybe sprinkle a little cayenne pepper on it as well. Or just eat it in a salad, or you can just juice it and drink the juice. But those are some of the benefits that you can get from eating cucumbers and drinking cucumber juice. You're listening to Faith Through Wellness. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're going to pivot. Again, the show's a little bit shorter than normal today. It's normally about an hour. It's going to be about 45 minutes today, partly because we were having some technical difficulties, as I said earlier when we started. Nevertheless, we're going to continue with our next segment, which is our Healing Herb segment. Now, last week, I began talking about the herb peppermint, and I said that I would finish up this week with some of the benefits of the herb peppermint. And again, you know, peppermint, you can drink the tea, the fresh tea, by heating your water and adding your herb. But you can also take peppermint oil, which is significantly more powerful than just drinking the tea. But each has its own benefit based upon what you're trying to accomplish. Now, with regard to picking up where we left off, we talked a little bit more again, like about peppermint. I just want to point out that with this peppermint, researchers from Narjan University in Saudi Arabia have actually found that peppermint has potent antibacterial activity, which we talked about already. It's antibacterial, antimicrobial, and it's a very powerful natural substance that we have. And in this particular study, they found that it had potent antibacterial activity, making it a great potential antibacterial agent against many multi-drug resistant pathogens. As I said earlier, because of the proliferation of drugs and vaccines and whatnot being given for different ailments, understand that no antibiotic, for instance, works against viruses. So it only works against bacteria. The problem is that these drugs don't wipe out all the bacteria. It might wipe out, say they wipe out 98%, 99%. The ones that it does not wipe out, they develop and they become resistant. So they become superbugs. And so now you have to try and create a stronger antibiotic of some sort. But even when you create that stronger one and you throw it at those other bacteria, it still does not wipe out all of them. It wipes out all but maybe 1%. So then those 1% become superbugs, even superbugs. So now you think about all the different antibiotics and then this happened, the different types of antibiotics and whatnot. And so now you begin to understand why you can start getting so many superbugs and there not being anything able to in the regular allopathic world deal with these studies, where when you start to deal with these mutated pathogens. But interestingly enough, when you go over to nature, the natural side, the Creator has made it in such that they don't become resistant to these natural antibiotics. And so, in this particular study that I just cited from Narjan University in Saudi Arabia, this study was published in the Journal of Herbal Medicine, and specifically, the researchers evaluated the antimicrobial and antibacterial activities of peppermint against several pathogens, and they used different forms of peppermint extracts, ethanol, methanol, etc., in their tests. They tested these peppermint extracts against several multi-drug resistant pathogenic bacterial clinical isolates. many, many different ones. And in order, the article, the study rather, to evaluate the antibacterial activity of these peppermint extracts, the researchers used the standard minimal inhibitory concentration, the MIC, and a minimal bactericidal concentration, MBC, methods. Basically, the accepted methods that they're going to be using. Based on the results of the study, they found that the peppermint extract, the ethyl acetate peppermint extract, exhibited the most potential inhibitory effect, particularly inhibiting the growth of all the tested pathogens. They also tested chloroform, ethanol, and methanol peppermint extracts. The results also reveal that the S pathogens had the lowest MIC value, which means that its growth can be inhibited with the lowest concentration of the peppermint extract. And it basically to make, I don't really want to mention the details, but these peppermint extracts, depending on which version they use or how much of a particular type of peppermint that they use, showed more proficient action against these pathogens. And basically, the finding of the study demonstrated that peppermint has potent antibacterial potential against multi-drug pathogens. Multi-drug resistant pathogens. Overall, the researchers conclude that peppermint can potentially be used as an antibacterial agent against many multi-drug resistant pathogens. Again, it was kind of the article and the study was a little technical, so I didn't want to go into too much of the details of getting too technical and using terms that we have to, you know, break down and try and explain in great detail. So again, we talked a lot last week about peppermint, but again, we talked about the benefits that it has in colds and flu, headaches and migraines, killing wounds, indigestion, irritable bowel syndrome, nausea and vomiting, even some skin problems. We talked about this last week. Peppermint oil, again, like I said before, can be used. It's stronger than the peppermint tea, but peppermint tea is actually great when you're having gastrointestinal problems, et cetera. But again, as I think I pointed out, there's been studies done by schools like the University of Maryland Medical Center. They found that peppermint is believed to have calming effects and that it is an ideal treatment for indigestion because it can actually calm the stomach muscles and improve bile. That they found at the University of Maryland Medical Center. So, again, think about this. It's a great, great herb. I'm about out of time now, but I want to thank you for listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I hope to be back, you know, if the plan is to be back next week if we don't have at the regular time, if we don't have any technical difficulties. I'd like to thank you for listening. We will see you next week, same time, same place. Until then, have a blessed week.